Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Innovator Insights. This is the podcast where we interview successful entrepreneurs about their journey, how they come up with the original idea, how they started the business, what obstacles they overcame on their way there. And today we are super excited to have Patrika Alice Cheston with us. She is an international speaker, multiple-time entrepreneur, and with a focus on startup marketing, which I know is very relevant to all our listeners. And she's spoken in many settings and on topics including not-so-sexy marketing, creative campaigns for complex or cliche products, which I believe is going to resonate with a lot of our audience. So without further ado, welcome, Patrika.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
It's our pleasure. Thanks for joining us. So before we get into your career, your business, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? What do you do when you're not working?
Yeah, so I'm currently based in North Carolina in the center of the state in the greater Greensboro area. I was actually born here. I've moved around quite a bit and then kind of made my way back home over the last couple of years. So it's been wonderful. In my spare time, I'm usually planning a trip. As you might have seen, I love to travel. I'm absolutely obsessed with it, finding different off the beaten path locations. And I'm also hanging out with my toddler. He's a 2-year-old and full of energy. So that takes up a good portion of my non-working time.
Oh yeah, I know a little bit about that. I got two of my own, but almost grown now. Awesome. And the travel piece, like, so you have a marketing agency, but you also, I noticed a lot in your background, you've worked a lot with travel destinations. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Yes. So it is, it's kind of a part of the marketing agency, but it's also really just a personal journey that I've followed. I am really passionate about sustainable tourism and not just, you know, the ecological impacts of tourism, but also the community impacts of tourism. Mm-hmm. So I make it, every chance that I get, I make it my mission to tell people about making travel more accessible and also making sure that people understand that when you travel, you have an opportunity to positively impact the communities that you're visiting, because mm-hmm. tourism dollars are some of the most valuable for many communities, even these major cities. You know, visiting people are what really bring in the money coming in. So it's something that I'm super passionate about, and just sharing how that can be more accessible to people and really taking travel out of the, you know, what I like to call the Instagram bubble, where everyone's thinking they need to be on a beautiful swing in Bali somewhere. Travel can be just going to the next town over and visiting somewhere and trying something new. So I think there's just so much benefit to experiencing a new place and experiencing a different way of life, that I'm always just talking about how people can travel more and how they can do it more responsibly.
That's great. What's your take on the recent sort of resistance to tourism in a lot of, you know, I hear it's happening in Tokyo. I know it's happening all over Europe.
Yeah.
These destinations that have been just overwhelmed by tourism. Do you have a perspective?
Absolutely, yes. Over-tourism is a major problem, and that's part of the platform that I use to advocate for sustainable tourism, because when communities are becoming overrun or overwhelmed by tourists coming in, then that means the tourist is not being responsible. While it's amazing to visit destinations, people still live there. That's their everyday life. I mean, you wouldn't want 5 million people coming into your house every day. And we don't treat these destinations with the respect that they need. So I think, you know, tourists can be more mindful in the destinations that they select. Maybe you've always wanted to go to Tokyo, but there are plenty of other beautiful places in Japan that are just as excited to have you there and just as exciting to visit. Maybe in Europe, for example, Barcelona is one of my favorite cities. I was there several years ago and had a wonderful time, but it's also overrun with tourists and there's a lot of political uprising about it. So I'm not going to Barcelona right now, as much as I personally love it. Maybe it makes sense for me to visit another city. And that's kind of that mindset of thinking that it's not just about you, it's about the locals that live there, it's about the experience for everyone. So there's a balance. There's a huge world out there. And while I'm not saying you can't go to your top destination, maybe there's another destination that could use your tourism dollars and that would provide an even more amazing experience.
And you're so right. You mentioned earlier the Instagram effect that I bet that's a lot what drives it too, because, you know, somebody posts some beautiful view or whatever it is, and then suddenly everybody else thinks they need to go do that same thing while there are 100 other equally beautiful views that they could go to. They just end up going to the same one. Well, great. Sorry, there was a little sidebar, but let's get back to your path. So you spent a lot of time with tourism, travel, and, you know, a career in marketing. When did you decide to start your own company, and what led you to that?
Yeah, so I kind of worked my way through the different aspects of marketing as a career. I started out with a startup and absolutely loved it. But then I always kind of pictured myself climbing the corporate ladder and eventually being the CMO of a company. And so I thought that I needed to really pivot to corporate and work my way up through the corporate ladder. And I went to a corporate company. I did not like it. I toughed it out for about 11 months and then said, no, this is not for me. And I went right back to startups because I think I just really love the energy that a startup brings, that, you know, excitement of trying new things and iterating quickly. It's just so much fun to be a part of, and it really ignites a passion in me. So as I started working with startups there, then, you know, the good and the bad thing about startups is that things change very quickly. So sometimes my role is phased out and sometimes they are moving it to somewhere else. And it happens. So I've had some challenging experiences with, you know, working in those startups, but every time I went right back to startups and started working in another creative marketing role there. And eventually I realized that I was just really passionate about creating experiences, whether that's just an event or whether it's an ongoing campaign where you're really teaching people how to think about your brand. And as I started building that, I realized I wanted to do it for more than just one company. So my agency idea was born. And from there, I just started reaching out to people who were starting small businesses and needed some help, whether it was one of my first clients was a yoga studio. And I love yoga in my personal life. So I started kind of just working with them on taking some pictures of their studio and then building out their social media presence. And then from there, it really just continued to grow because I realized that I loved being able to work on all kinds of projects and keep that variety going so that I could stay excited and stay passionate. And it's been a wonderful journey ever since.
Awesome. And what was the name of your first company?
It was Modify Marketing.
Okay, great. And then last year you started Outsource SDR, is that correct?
Yes. So we've actually just rolled Outsource SDR into Roundology, which is my bigger agency. So we've used that to add a sales aspect. We
were getting a lot of people that wanted both sales and marketing services. So we figured. Sorry, Patrika, I just lost your audio there.
Oh, no. One second. Let me see.
Now I hear you again.
Oh, okay. That might have been on mine.
We can no edit problem. That out.
Okay, cool. Let me just make sure that it's fully, there's no connection issues or anything like that.
I'll just ask you the question again, and then we can figure out the best way to edit it.
Okay.
And then you started your company called Outsource SDR, right?
Yes, we started that last year. It was a super exciting project that we've actually decided to roll into Roundology. So you'll be seeing a lot of things are happening there. It's basically a sales focused organization that helps people generate leads and then also use SDRs to nurture those leads and book meetings. So in having my marketing agency Roundology, we had a lot of interest in the sales aspect too. So we've decided to kind of expand Roundology to be both marketing and sales. So it's super exciting.
Great. And are you using local SDRs, overseas SDRs, or AI SDRs?
It's actually a combination. I've been working with some AI experts to help me with the AI aspect because I personally am not, you know, I'm definitely, while I been very interested in AI, setting up like chatbots and things like that has not been my specialty, but there are a lot of people who know better than me. So I am more than willing to outsource those things so that I can learn more and also provide effective services. So yeah, there's a combination. So helping people working with their budgets, because of course, small businesses are dealing with a wide range of budgets. So we have a combination of local, outsourced, and AI technology.
Great. Would love to talk more about something you mentioned earlier about experiences and you know, your passion for creating experiences. I think that that's somehow sometimes a little bit forgotten or down prioritized because there's so much focus on funnel marketing and leads and, you know, emails or Google ads, whatever it is, and, you know, driving people, and sometimes there's less focus or too little focus on actually what is the experience of interacting with your brand. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I know a lot of small businesses are looking for events to, you know, show up at and basically enjoy their local communities and engage in that way. And a lot of times we think that, you know, just sitting at a table and saying hi to folks is enough. And while that is, you know, definitely a valid approach, I think thinking about the way that someone is going to remember your brand is the way to really build that connection. Because if you think about the last event that you went to, it wasn't just, you know, walking around, seeing a table and saying, oh, that's cool, look at that, oh, okay, and just continuing to walk. It's the person that, whether they told you a joke, whether they had someone, you know, making popcorn next to the booth or whatever, it's something that's tangible. It's something that's easy to remember and something that connects that person with your brand. So in creating experiences, no matter what the brand is, you can think outside the box. It doesn't just have to be, oh, I do IT, so my entire brand has to be computers. What's the fun part of computers? What's the part of computers that you are, you know, that people always talk to you about? What's that thing that is able to hook people in? And it takes time to think of this, definitely. It's not something that just, you know, pops into everyone's minds, but sometimes it can be a little bit abstract. For example, I was working with a legal technology company that was basically focused on compliance and a lot of those like really boring things that nobody really wants to think about. And we were at a financial services conference, which is just about as boring as it sounds. Yeah. It was like, you see people coming out of sessions and they're just like half asleep. So we decided to do a kind of a carnival food truck type of thing outside of the event. So when people were leaving, they see funnel cake and they just basically light up, because who's thinking of funnel cake and fried Oreos at an event that is about financial technology? And while funnel cake doesn't really have anything to do with legal tech, it was still something that was just able to set a memory. So then when we positioned our sales reps right outside the food truck and they were just talking to people while they were waiting for their orders, and they would just say, hey, you know, this is from us. Thanks for attending the conference. We're really excited to have you here. Excited to meet you. And then in our follow-up email campaign, we just said funnel cake ? And sent them different types of emails about the funnel cake. And it really built relationships because it was something that stood out from the rest of the conference and allowed people to have something to remember us by, even though it wasn't necessarily directly tied to the brand, it was still an experience that we created. So it's really about building that connection, whether it's, you know, abstract or something concrete like that.
Yeah, that's great. So the example you used was more of a trade show, creating experiences. Do you have other experiences too, of more of how people interact with the brand in a sort of customer setting?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are, you know, even if you are using like a storefront, for example, just the way that you greet people when they come into your store, or the music, the atmosphere, those things play into what the customer is seeing, as well as what the customer is going to remember. And when you're training associates or training people that are going to be working for your brand, making sure that they speak your customer's language up front. That is always going to be something that is really valuable to creating an experience that they can remember. So, for example, if your customers are, you know, looking for something wild and crazy, you don't want to say, hello, welcome to my store, thank you for entering. That is not going to be fun, you know, like that's not going to fit what the customer is looking for. You want to match their energy, you want to create that environment that they're going to thrive in and then going to continue to build that relationship with you. So whether and that applies online too, even if it's an online first business, what is your customer's experience when they first see your website? Is it something that immediately resonates with them, or is it something where they have to like dig around and look for what they want? And there are just so many tools out there that allow us to kind of create these personalized experiences that we can build. Even if it's a funnel, we can build a funnel that adapts to the customer so that you can continue to connect with them.
That's great. Great. One topic that kind of stood out in your bio was the not so sexy marketing. how to create creative campaigns for complex or cliche products. Can you share a little more about that?
Yeah. So one of those was definitely the funnel cake. That was one of the legal tech companies that I worked with. But I've worked with a lot of different types of technology companies that are on the kind of the not fun side of technology. You know, everybody nowadays wants to have the latest AI tool that's doing something really cool. But what about the infrastructure that's running those tools, like the APIs and all of the things that are behind it? Those are not the things that everybody wants to be talking about, but they're still the things that people need in order to build the cool stuff. So there are so many brands out there and so many entrepreneurs out there that are brilliant and building these things that are platforms on which the fun products are built, basically. And a lot of times we get caught up in thinking, oh, well, I can't do that cool thing because my brand isn't cool. You know, I'm infrastructure for an IT product, or I'm, like I said, legal tech or compliance or something that is traditionally not so sexy. But the thing is, what is sexy is the problem that you're solving for the person. If someone else is building a product, they need that infrastructure that you've created. They need those technologies that you're building. So there is so much out there that is still needed. And the human at the end of the funnel wants to have their problem solved. They want the relief from the stress that they're dealing with. And if your product brings that relief, that is incredible to them. So thinking about your product as the problem that it solves, not just, you know, the features or the like boringness of it or anything like that, allows you to connect with that product and then start to figure out how to connect with that customer or connect with that future customer. And that's really what the whole not so sexy marketing is about taking that and thinking about the human at the end of the day and saying, you know what, I'm solving that human's problem. And that is exactly what they want. Even if I'm saying, you know, I'm doing it with XYZ, they want their problem solved. So how are you going to solve their problem for them?
Yeah, I think that's a great insight. I think so many founders, it's like particularly technical founders, that build products and technology, so proud of what you built and how complex it was. So we tend to talk too much about that, right? It's like, this is how we do things. And I know at my company Gemba, we help solve some pretty complex problems for people. We help them turn an idea into a finished product. And through that, it's a lot of, design drawings and CAD and, bill of materials and working with factories and compliance. And so it's easy to get bogged down in that and just talk about that. But to your point, what we're really doing is that we're helping someone realize their dreams. We're helping turn someone's idea into an awesome product that's going to help, thousands or millions of people out there. And I think that's really what we should be talking about. And we've gotten better at that, I think, over the years. But I think in the beginning, we were pretty boring and technical. And if you landed on our website, I had to spend a lot of brain cells to figure out what are we actually doing here and what's the end goal. So I think that's great.
That's awesome. I mean, I love seeing people's dreams come to life. That's amazing.
Yeah, we feel very fortunate to be able to play a small part in other people's entrepreneurial journey. Another topic that you've talked a lot about is women in tech. Would you be willing to share a little bit about your experiences of being a young woman in tech?
Absolutely. It's definitely been it's a road with a lot of ups and downs, I'd say. Things looked a lot different 10 years ago when I was really getting into tech for the first time. And I'm grateful for that things are changing, I believe, in a positive direction. But starting out, there were a lot of times where I was, one of the only women in the room, and that was intimidating. And it was hard to kind of find my voice in a lot of ways because I had parents that, raised me in a way that they never told me that I couldn't speak up. They never told me I didn't have a voice. They always encouraged me to, really look for ways to shine. And when I got into those rooms, I started feeling like, oh, maybe I'm doing too much. Maybe I need to step back. And then there were times where it was kind of assumed that I would step back, and I started seeing those moments and feeling uncomfortable with those. But I was very fortunate to have a lot of amazing mentors, and also have even some men that I worked with that were willing to notice those things and listen to me and say, you know what? No, we're going to put Patrika in these rooms because her opinion is valuable, her experience is valuable. There's so much power in advocacy for the people that you see that are coming along on the journey behind you. And that's something that I've been fortunate to receive, but now I'm also very fortunate to be able to give as I continue to rise in my journey. And, there've been a number of times where I've felt like that it's the time where I need to step back, or I'm doing too much, or I'm being over the top, or anything like that. But then I start to remember that there are plenty of people that are, not a woman, that are not feeling that same way. And they're basically never told that they need to sit down, be quiet, step back, or anything like that. So I tend to remind myself, I got to keep going, because if I keep going, then someone 10 years down the road is going to maybe see my journey and think, you know what, I got to keep going. And that person might be founding the next Apple, the next Microsoft. I don't know. But there are so many people that are, that have so much knowledge and passion that just need to see people in the spaces that they're trying to get to. So I always encourage women in tech to keep going, even if you're feeling like you're in a place that is, you're not welcome or you're not necessarily wanted. Keep going, because the moment that you're there, that opens the door for someone else to get in there too. And then the room starts to change. It doesn't always look like it's just one of me in a room anymore. And it's not that way. I now work with companies where I'm one of many women in tech roles. And so also I'm seeing more women in tech leadership, which is just so exciting because different perspectives bring so much value to the products that we're creating. So being able to help support those roles is something that I'm so passionate about and so grateful to be able to do.
Yeah. Are you worried that progress is going to stall here during the current administration? I mean, there's certainly been a lot of talk about that. A lot of the AI efforts have been scrapped, and it's gone from, it felt like 3, 4 years ago, it was, gaining tremendous momentum, and now it feels like a lot of those efforts have been paused at a minimum. I hope it's a pause and not an end.
Yes, absolutely. It's unfortunate that we're seeing this type of push against DEI, which I really believe helps get people into those rooms that wouldn't have had that opportunity otherwise, due to, a lot of factors. It's not, there are a lot of environmental factors. There are a lot of financial factors that are preventing people of all kinds of diverse opinions from getting into rooms where decisions are being made. And I think one great thing about startups in general, while a lot of them are VC funded, there are a lot of new ways that startups are getting funding, and they're not as dependent on these major billionaires and, billionaire corporations anymore. And you're seeing people who are literally building brands online through, like, TikTok, for example. And it's incredible to see that they're, accessing funds and accessing audiences in new ways. And I think one thing that encourages me is that there are more avenues than ever to creating a product or creating a service or creating any type of business and getting it out there. So even when the billionaires say no, even when these giant corporations say no, there are startups saying yes. There are opportunities out there to build your own audience that will say yes to you. without having to go through some of these, traditional avenues. So while I'd say on a corporate side, it's definitely getting harder again, which is not good. There are still so many avenues out there. And if we stop and let them say that we're not going to be in those rooms, then what does that look like for the future? What does that look like for our children, our grandchildren? And I think we have to keep going, and if they say no, don't go through this door, then we find a window and we find something else to get, some way else to get into the room.
Yeah, that's great. Because I mean, you're so right that I think that the barriers to entry to start a company has been lowered significantly. Just over, through Amazon and in our space, Alibaba and Shopify and it's what used to back. I was around back in the dot-com days, but you try to build a store, you had to build your own code, your own shopping cart, basically. So it required quite a lot of money, quite a lot of resources to be able to get something off the ground. And today the cost of entry has gone down a lot. And I think you bring up a great point that democratizes entrepreneurship in a different way than maybe ever before. Because before it was a lot about, and particularly in tech, to getting into that old boys club that, mostly white old boys club that, need access to that to get to the money to be able to go out there and make a big difference. And now we see two person, three person companies, growing to tens, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenues in a matter of a few years and without raising a ton of money. So I think that's super exciting.
Very, I agree.
Awesome. Well, we're kind of coming to the end of our time here. Wanted to ask you a couple of questions before we wrap up. First, what are you excited about here? And we're towards the end of 2025. What are you excited about for the rest of this year and for 2026? What's on your agenda?
So I am excited about I'm actually really excited about this the impact of AI in marketing. I think we're seeing a lot of people are swinging so hard in like the AI can do everything phase that I think people are starting to realize the value of human content creation and human connection. So I think over the next, definitely over the next year, I think we're going to see the brands that are most authentic in that human experience are really going to shine and really be able to step forward. And we're starting to see people really connect with the brands that are just using like real people and real photography and things like that. So I'm excited to see kind of the other side of the AI spectrum as people are really, continuing to build, but also seeing it as a tool instead of just seeing it as a replacement for the human experience. So that's something that I'm monitoring and kind of keeping an eye on.
I think that's great. Yeah, that there's so much talk about AI and how it's going to change things, and not so much about how do you stand out, how do you create an alternative to it. And I think you're absolutely right. I feel you're already seeing that. There's people are their BS meter or your ability to recognize automated emails, and no matter what, how much personalization you put in there, it just doesn't feel like a human on the other side. And I think particularly younger people are really good at recognizing when things aren't authentic and when they're automated or fake. So I hadn't thought about that much, but I agree with you. That's going to be exciting to see how you what brands are able to take advantage of that.
Yes, completely agree.
Awesome. So before we ask the final question, where can people find you? What's if they want to reach out to you, if they want to contact you, if they want to learn more about you and what you do, where should they go?
So my marketing agency's name is Roundology, spelled round, Roundy, and then ology. And then on social media, I'm Patrika Elise, just about wherever you can find me, Patrika Alis, no spaces or anything like that. So I'm on Instagram, on basically all the major social media platforms. So I love to share my travel journeys and talk about entrepreneurship. So love to see you there. Reach out to
Sweet.
connect.
So before we wrap up, one last question. If you could give one piece of advice to folks that are out there either thinking about becoming entrepreneurs, starting a business, or early in their journey, what would you tell them?
I think the thing that has always stuck with me is that if you Basically, if you don't take the step, then you're going to be in the same place that you were if you took the step and you failed. But actually, if you take the step and you fail, you've got even more knowledge than you had in the first place. So there's so much value in simply just taking a step and trying something new. Entrepreneurship is extremely intimidating and it's scary to try and put yourself out there. But if you never do it, someone else is going to, and you are in the same place that you would have been. So you might as well take a little step and try something new.
I love that. I love that. When I moved, I grew up in Sweden, and when I moved here in the to the States, one of the mantras that helped me make the move was that, I can always go back. It's not like forever. It doesn't have to be forever. It ended up that maybe it will be forever, but I think that's it's a great metaphor to have. It's like this is not permanent. You're trying something. It's like you're trying on a new jacket. If you don't like it, you take it off and go back to doing something different. But to lower the stakes a little bit. It's on the other hand, entrepreneurship is not easy. It's hard, but also incredibly rewarding. So,
Completely. Yes, it is.
Patrika, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining our podcast. I know our listeners are gonna love it. Best of luck in the year ahead, and thanks for joining us on Innovator Insights.
Thank you again. It's been a wonderful, wonderful adventure.
All righty, this is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur, or you work in a company that creates new products, and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show, and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your posts and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content to make sure you don't miss any episodes. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a ton to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to gemba.com. and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.